The following message was recorded live at Crossroads Church, a grace-centered community in central Alberta.
Well, today is Palm Sunday, and this has got to be the most different Palm Sunday that I've ever experienced here at Crossroads. Usually this place on Palm Sunday is packed with people, and it's a great celebration day because we have lots of baptisms on Palm Sunday, but today is very different, and so it's not going to be the same. I know a lot of you were excited about being baptized and others excited about watching baptisms. Can I just tell you that we're going to work that through a little bit and figure out how to do it and when we can do it. But at the moment, we have to postpone it. But we're not going to postpone it forever. Actually, while I'm talking about Palm Sunday, just to remind you that Good Friday services are coming up real fast. And we have two of them at 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, both online on Friday morning. And just to give you a heads up about that, if you could actually prepare yourself to do communion at home. Every Good Friday service, we have communion where we take bread and we take the cup and we enjoy it together. This Good Friday, we're going to do it, but we're going to lead you through it at home. So if you can be ready for that with some bread and some grape juice or whatever you want, we'll have a wonderful time celebrating communion in our homes. Easter Sunday services at 9, 11, and 6. If you have friends that would like a message of hope, invite them to watch on Easter Sunday. I'm going to be talking about that great statement of Jesus where he said, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. And whoever dies and believes in me will live. It's a great, great statement of Jesus. Very appropriate for Easter Sunday. So that's where we're going on Good Friday and on Easter Sunday. Now today, I want to get back to a little series that we started last week. Just a small series that we're doing 3 weeks in total called Unshakable, subtitled Why Jesus Matters. And this little series takes three of the, I call them astonishing claims of Jesus. And we're going to look at them and try and understand them so that we can build our lives on them. Last week, we looked at that great statement of Jesus where he said, I am the light of the world. And as we thought about that statement, we realized that to follow Jesus is actually to follow the light. It's actually to walk in light. And to not follow Jesus is actually to be walking around in darkness. So why Jesus matters there is because you can walk in the light, not darkness. Jesus is the light of the world. Today I want to take you to a second great statement Jesus made, which to me is equally astonishing. And that's the statement, I am the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. I want to read you where he actually says that. It's in the book of John in the New Testament. Just a few verses from John chapter 10, starting at verse 8. These are the words of Jesus. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. They'll come and go freely and will find good pasture. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. Now, on face value or maybe first hearing, that may not sound as astonishing as it really is. Maybe not as astonishing as I'm the light of the world, or even the one we'll look at next week, I am the resurrection and the life. But when you dig into it a little bit, it is incredibly astonishing when you really understand what Jesus was saying. See, people in his culture, they understood that figure of speech. They knew shepherds and sheep, maybe like we don't. Some people do, but not all of us. They understood shepherds and sheep. And they knew that a good shepherd was somebody that protected the flock, provided for them, led them out into green pastures. We heard Benny read from Psalm 23. That's what a good shepherd did. He led them to green pastures, found quiet waters for them, rescued them when they were in trouble. When they fell down and were beat up and bruised, he would restore them. The good shepherd was everything to the sheep. And actually, it's all captured in a little phrase that I read to you where it says, those, they will come and go freely and find good pasture. That phrase, they will come and go freely and find good pasture, was a Jewish description of safety and security. And so when Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, it's like he's saying this. I'm the one person that you can build your life on that will give you real security and real safety. I'm the one that can lead you. I can guide you. When you need me to, I'll rescue you. I can secure your life like nobody else can. That's an astonishing statement when you think about it. And actually, the heart of it, the very heart of it, is captured in that little phrase that you might have picked up as I read it to you, where Jesus says, my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life, a rich and satisfying life. That, in a nutshell, is what the good shepherd does. He gives the sheep a rich and satisfying life. So I want to talk to you for a few minutes about that. I want to talk to you about how to have a rich and satisfying life. And I want to talk about how an engagement with Jesus as the good shepherd leads into that rich and satisfying life. But before we get there, it'd probably be useful to ask the question, what would prompt Jesus to say, I'm the good shepherd? Like, what would bring that up? I think probably what brought it up was the fact that he would look at the crowds. He would look at the people. He would move through the crowds, John tells us. And often his statement about the people he saw was this: they were harassed and they were helpless. They were just like sheep without a shepherd. Harassed, helpless, just like sheep without a shepherd. In other words, they didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where to look for protection. They didn't know where to find food. They didn't know where to find help. They were just going from pillar to post and taken advantage of by anybody that wanted to. I don't know if you've ever felt like that. I think sometimes in our world we feel like that, don't we? That we're kind of harassed and helpless and we're just not sure what tomorrow holds or where we're going or how we're going to make it. That's what prompted this statement by Jesus, I am the good shepherd. He looked at people then and he looks at you now. He looks at me and he says, you know, without me, you're just going to be harassed and helpless like a sheep with nobody, without a shepherd, nobody that can give them a rich and satisfying life. Now, before I just kind of unpack for you how to have a rich and satisfying life, I want you to notice two things that are absolutely important in the text that we can't miss. One would be this. When Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, he's putting himself in competition with every other voice out there that says, I can give you a rich and promising life. He's saying to every other voice out there, I'm the one that can do it. You can't. He's in competition with all the other voices. He calls them here thieves and robbers. In our world, they're the usual suspects, aren't they? They're sex, money, power, sports, pleasure, you name it. All the voices that call to us and say, I can give you life. But Jesus puts himself aside and apart from that and says, listen, I'm the one that can give you a rich and promising life, not money, not sex, not power. I think if we take a moment to think about that, I think we can understand that. I was thinking about sex, and I thought about the fact that, you know, really, in our world, we're told to be yourself and just anything goes. And if it feels good, do it kind of thing. But what's the outcome of that attitude, that way of life? It's broken homes, broken marriages, wrecked people, addictions, often suicides. It might satisfy for the moment, but in the end, there's no life in it. What people think will bring them life ultimately brings death. What about money? You know, I was a youth pastor a long time ago when I had hair and when I was cool and all of that, and in North Vancouver. And I was in my office one day, just a young punk youth pastor. I think I was about 26 years old. And the phone rang and I picked it up. And it was a man that owned a business, a very successful business in North Vancouver. And he wasn't a believer. I didn't know much about him, but he called and he said, I want to make an appointment with you and I want you to come and meet me in my office. I thought, why would a rich businessman want to meet a young youth pastor? So I asked him, I said, why would you want to meet with me? He said, well, I was in a restaurant the other day and having my meal and saw a kid over in the corner and he bowed and he gave thanks for his food. He said, so I got up and I went over to him and I said, who are you praying to? And this kid said, I was praying to God. And the businessman said, I've been trying to find God for a long time and I don't know where he is. Can you help me find God? This young kid, whose name was Todd, said, no, but my youth pastor can. And he gave him my number and the guy called me and I went a couple days later into his office and I was just so intimidated, way over my head. Sat across from this massive desk. He had a pile of files here. And he said to me, I've made a lot of money in my life. He said, all these files, they represent more money than I'll ever need. But he said, I'm done with it. He said, it's not delivering. He said, it's wrecked my marriage. My marriage is gone. My family's gone. He said, can you tell me how I could find God? I never forgot that because it reminds me that so many people try and build their lives on money, but in the end, it can't deliver either. It promises life, but often leads to death. And what about sport? You know, all of these things actually are good in their proper place. That's the deal. They're really good. But when we make them idols, or we try and build our lives on them, or we try and get out of them what we're never meant to get out of them, well, it ends up with death on the inside, and sometimes physical death. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that think, if I could just be a great athlete, you know, and I could have fame and fortune, and then I'd have it made. I'd have real life. You know, one of my favorite athletes is Tom Brady. I got just full disclosure. I love Tom Brady, and I've followed him for years, and so I've been a New England Patriots fan. And if you follow that, you know that he's now left and he's with Tampa Bay, and so now I'm a Tampa Bay fan. And but here's the deal about Tom Brady. He's 43 years old, and they call him the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. But you know, he's going to go into Tampa Bay, and he's going to play a couple years. He may or may not do well, but in 2 or 3 years from now, he's yesterday's man. Nobody's going to talk much about Tom Brady. There'll be somebody else, and that's the way it is when you build your lives on things like that, and you think the fame and fortune will deliver. It's not long before you're yesterday's man or yesterday's woman, and Jesus is in competition with all that when he says, I can give you a rich and promising life. There's so many voices in our world that say that. The question is, what voice are we going to listen to? Now, the other thing around that statement of Jesus is what he says when he says, I am the good shepherd, and then don't miss this. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep, or better, the good shepherd will lay down his life for the sheep. The rich and satisfying life that Jesus offers is actually something that comes to us at huge cost, huge cost. It's a free offer for anybody that wants to take him up on it, but huge cost. I mean, it would mean that Jesus will have to lay down his life, and he's looking ahead to the cross. In Palm Sunday, we look ahead to Good Friday, where Jesus was hung on the cross and crucified, and the Bible tells us not for himself, but in our place. And on that day, he would pay the debt of sin that we could never pay, so that the Father could forgive us and welcome us into his presence. And Jesus could offer us this rich and promising life. It's a free offer, but it comes at great cost, the cost of his own life. So that's, I think, the context of this great offer, where Jesus says, as the good shepherd, I can give you a rich and a promising life. So let me just just a few minutes, let me unpack that for you. And I thought I'd make it real simple, because that's the best way that works for me too. And I'd like to just talk to you for a few minutes about how anybody can have a rich and promising life in this world, even this world as it is, wrecked and broken as it is, stuck in our homes and worried about viruses. How can anybody have a rich and promising life in this world, the one that Jesus offers? I'm going to give you 4 points, and each one of these are 4 points that will, if you grab them and live into them, you'll find out that you end up with a rich and promising life. I think we all want a rich and promising life. So practically, when Jesus makes this offer, how do we take him up on it? How do we engage with that? Let me give you the first point right off the top. First thing you have to do is you just have to admit your need for God, or admit your need for Jesus. The first reason I think that people will never experience a rich and promising life is because they can never admit their need. They can never admit that they have a problem. They can never admit that they need God. The attitude is, you know, I can make it. I'll do it. I'll figure it out. Or, you know what? If I gave my life to Christ to follow him, my life would be cramped or restricted, and I wouldn't have freedom. Listen, nothing could be further from the truth. That's a lie from Satan. To follow Jesus Christ gives security and freedom like you've never had in your life before. We were made for that kind of relationship, but the first thing that everybody needs to do is simply admit that we need him. Admit that we need him. I made a study years ago of the miracles of Jesus, and what I found was every miracle begins with one thing. Every single one. Do you know what it is? Everybody that Jesus did a miracle for had a problem. Everybody had a problem. So if you're sitting there today saying, man, I got a problem, or I got a ton of problems, let me tell you this. You are a candidate for a miracle from Jesus, because everybody that he did a miracle for had a problem. If you have a problem and you're willing to say to God, I can't fix it, I can't deal with it, it's way over my head, I need you, that's the first step of engagement with God. It's to actually say to him, I need you. I cannot cope. I cannot deal with this. I've got a past. I've got a present. I don't know if I have a future. I need you. It's a way of humbling ourselves before him, but that's always the way it starts when you want to enter into a rich and satisfying life. It's actually to put up your hand and say, hey, me, I need help. It's actually another way of saying, it's to choose to listen to the right voice. All the voices that offer us life, money, sex, power, fame, fortune, you name it, or Jesus. You have to make that decision. And when you make a decision to listen to the voice of Jesus, you enter into a relationship with him that's real and personal. And it's like nothing you've ever experienced in your life before. Nothing at all. You know, I could tell you a story for a moment. When I was a kid, we had a youth group in our church, and there were a lot of kids in there, but not many girls, actually, sadly. And so what happened was there were three or four girls and about 10 of us guys, and we would always try, and we would compete to date, you see, is kind of what happened. And usually the desirable ones weren't available, and the available ones weren't desirable, but one day one of the really desirable, in fact, the most desirable became available. And so I picked up the phone, and I said, her name was Terry Reimer. I said, Terry, would you like to go out on a date? And for whatever reason, she said yes. Never forget it. Well, I just got my driver's license, so I borrowed my mom's gold Maverick and went over and picked her up. My heart was palpitating. My palms were sweating, and I hardly knew what I was doing. And I picked her up, and I just remembered to open the door for her, and she got in. And we went on a date, and I didn't know where to take her on a date, so we went to the mall. And it was in Coquitlam, B.C., Loheed Mall. And we went to the mall, and we walked through the mall, and I might have bought her an ice cream or something. I don't remember much about it. It was crazy. I was just with Terry Reimer. What I do remember vividly is leaving the mall and going through the parking lot to the car, and it was raining. But I'd prepared for that, and I had an umbrella. And so I put the umbrella up, and she put her hand on it, and I put my hand right here, and our hands touched. They touched, and I thought, man, I think I've died and gone to heaven. I'm almost holding hands with Terry Reimer. And we walked to the car, and I got her in the car, and I got her home, and I thought, that is amazing. Sadly, the relationship didn't last long, and she dumped me for somebody else. And as I look back on that, two things strike me about it. By the way, it was her loss and Ginny's gain. But anyway, two things strike me about it. One is, it was so awkward being with Terry Reimer. So awkward. And yet it was so exciting. It was so exciting. So awkward and yet so exciting. And I thought, you know, when you begin a relationship with Jesus, at first it's so awkward. Like maybe you never read a Bible before. And now you got to figure out how to read a Bible and pray. And sometimes you gather together with other Christians and they're way down the road and you feel so awkward trying to pray or even talk about God. And you come and you sit in a church with people that sing and you've never done that before and it's so awkward. But it's so exciting at the same time because you know that the creator of the universe has come in and changed your heart. And you're a new person on the inside. And you have peace and he's beginning to fill up empty places and it's a life like you've never had before. And there's times when you're sure that he's calling you by name. There's times when you read that book and you're sure that it was written just for you. It's so awkward and yet so exciting, this relationship with Jesus. But that's where a rich and satisfying life begins. When I choose to listen to his voice, admit that I need him, and begin to follow him. Now, here's the second thing that I think is important to put on the screen here. Not only do you need to admit your need of Jesus, but you need to make an effort to spend time with him. Just, you need to make an effort to spend time with him. I mean, any relationship is hard work. And a lot of people think, well, you know, I'll just sit back and I'll ask Jesus to give me this rich life and he'll just download it on me and that'll be it. He says, no. This is a relationship, people. This is a relationship where you begin with me. And it's awkward and it's exciting, but carry on with me. And like any relationship, put the work into it. Because when you put the work into this relationship, guaranteed, you'll get to know him at a level that you never thought was possible. And the life gets fuller and deeper and richer. The good news is this. God wants to spend time with you. He wants to spend time with you. He wants to hang out with you. Imagine that. The creator of the universe. He wants to spend time with you. So how do we do that? Well, I think we do it by making Sunday worship a priority. Just on our calendars. Sunday is where we worship with God's people. We spend time with them because we want more of this life that we've just got a taste of. We maybe join a small group or a digital group like we're doing now. You can email us at the church here, call us at the church, and we can get you hooked up in a digital group with other people that are trying to follow in the way of Jesus. And it's just a way of deepening that life that he's beginning to put in us. Spending time each day reading his word. Just take 15 minutes a day and take the book of John in the Bible and start reading it just one chapter a day. It's a way of spending time with Jesus. But the more time you spend with him, the richer and fuller and deeper that life becomes. Then thirdly, third way we can experience a rich and satisfying life is through your losses, allow God to love you. Through your losses, allow God to love you. We're in a season of great loss. People lost jobs, they've lost money, they've lost peers that they work with, they've lost a lot of things, and many, many people in our community are just isolated in their homes. It's a great season of loss. But I want to tell you this, that your worst day in your life becomes the best day in your life when it drives you back to Jesus. Let me say that again. Your worst day in your life becomes your best day in your life when it drives you back to Jesus. The losses that you're experiencing, let those losses drive you to Jesus Christ, drive you to him. You know, remember the story in the Bible, the prodigal son? He had a lot of losses, but those losses came from poor choices. They came from sin. Sometimes our losses are that way too. And you know, the prodigal, he never expected that the father would welcome him back. But if you pick up the story, it's in Luke 15 and read it sometime, you'll find he didn't expect the father to take him back. And he got to the bottom. I mean, a Jewish boy working in a pig pen. And that was what actually got him to bring him to his senses. And he thought, I'm going to go back to my father. He didn't know how his father would receive him. Now, Jesus told the story to tell us that God is like the father and we're like the prodigal. And the story says that the father, he was waiting and he was watching for his son day after day after day. And one day he saw some movement on the dusty road and it was his boy coming home. And it says the father ran to him. Son never expected that. The father ran to him and the father embraced him. Never expected that either. He put a clean robe on him. Didn't expect that. Sandals on his feet, a ring on his hand. He restored him to his status and they had a party. They celebrated. The son never expected that. You know what he expected? He expected the father to be standing there like this saying, well, what have you done now? Or standing like this saying, we'll just see how long this one lasts. But what he got was a father with open arms that ran and embraced him full on and restored him to his original status. And it reminded me, you know what sin does? It lowers our expectations of God. When we sin and we lose that way, we begin to think that God could never, ever forgive us. He'd never take us back. And if he did, he'd put us on probation. Sin will always lower your expectations of God, but God isn't like that. God is never more excited than when we come just as we are and say, I need help. He's never more excited than when you put up your hand, the white flag of surrender, and say, it's me and I need you, Father. And you'll find the same response that the prodigal did. So that's the third point. to experience a rich and satisfying life is let your losses drive you back to God. Don't let them keep you away. I mean, he's still there. The good shepherd rescues. The good shepherd restores. The good shepherd brings back, makes a part of the flock again. So here's the fourth point that I think is important too, is it's important that we learn to develop a hunger and thirst for God. I read somewhere in the Bible these words: blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they will be satisfied or filled. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, for they'll be satisfied or filled. So let me just back up and recap where we've come here. Jesus makes this offer as the good shepherd: I will give you a rich and satisfying life. Where does it begin? It begins when I make the choice to listen to his voice and take him seriously and say, I want that. I need that. Admit my need of him. And then as I go on to pursue that relationship and spend time with him and with his people, that life that he puts in me develops and grows and increases. And I'll be like anybody else in life. I won't be immune to all the troubles of the world and the job losses and the cancers and even sin. It'll still take me out from time to time. But never let it drive you away from him. Let your losses always drive you to him. And you'll find that life gets richer and deeper because you'll experience him at a level you never had before. He's gracious and compassionate and forgiving and a God that loves to restore and doesn't count your past against you. That's an amazing God. So this last point is that you go on developing a hunger and thirst for him, because the more you hunger and thirst, the more you're filled and the more you're satisfied. And I make no apology for it, but I love C.S. Lewis. And here's a quote from C.S. Lewis. He said, hunger would be absurd if there were no such thing as food. Thirst would be absurd if there were no such thing as water. Loneliness would be absurd if there were no possibility of satisfying that yearning in relationship with another. To desire to find God would be absurd if God didn't exist. That's a great statement. The very fact that we desire God, the very fact that we have these hungers in us is a fact that God exists. We all have certain hungers and desires, and our whole life can be spent trying to satisfy them and pursue them. And ultimately, if it's not God, it leaves us empty. But what we have to learn to do is redirect those hungers and desires and take them to God and say, God, make me hungry for you. Because he loves it when we hunger for him. He loves it when we want to spend time with him. And he runs to us the moment that we want to spend time with him. You know what? You think, well, you know, who am I? I screw up all the time and I get it wrong all the time. You know, God just loves every desire in your heart to seek him, to know him, and to please him. And he'll go over the top for you if that desire is in your heart. You know, I can tell you one more story. I don't know what the time is here, but let me tell you one more story. When I was a youth pastor, just out of being a youth pastor, I finally had enough money to buy a good car, and it wasn't a good car. It was good to me. I bought a nice blue, I think it was a Buick. I don't know what it was, Buick, but it was really nice. It was blue. And it was old, but it was okay. It was new. And I parked it right outside of our place. And I thought, man, this is amazing. And there it was. And my young son, Ryan, came in and said, Dad, I'd like to wash it for you. And I thought, oh, no. It was dirty and muddy. And I just didn't want to wash it. And he wanted to wash it. And finally, I thought, you know, it's in his heart to please me. I'll let him do it. I closed the curtains, and he washed the thing. And when I opened the curtains, it was just a car with mud spread all around it and dirt all over it. It was horrible. But I drove it for 2 weeks like that. You know why? Because I knew he wanted to please me. And I affirmed him every way I could because I knew what was in his heart. Sometimes that's like us with God. We want to please him, but we can make a mess of things. But it's the heart desire that he loves. Any desire to love him, to pursue him, to seek him, he'll come to you running and satisfy you with more of the good life that he's promised to give us. So every one of us actually is created to know God, and sometimes that's why it seems like we have maybe a hole in our heart or an empty place in there. And people say that's the space that God's meant to occupy. And when you open your heart up to God, you'll find out that he fills those empty corners in a way nobody and nothing else actually can. I don't know where you are in your journey right now, but I do know this, that there's a person who wants to journey with you, and his name is Jesus Christ. And if you will put up your hand to him and say, please, please give me life, he will give you life like you've never had it before. That's why Jesus matters. Jesus matters not only because if you follow him, you'll never walk in darkness, but if you follow him, actually, you will end up with life like you've never had before. It's put other ways in the Bible. It's called here, rich and satisfying life. Other places, it's abundant life or superabundant life or life to the full. It's the life of God himself that he puts in us, and it's eternal. It lasts forever. That's why Jesus could say, if you live and believe in me, you'll actually never die. Could I invite you today to take Jesus up on his offer? Let me show you one more statement he made from Matthew chapter 11, Matthew 11, 28. Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I'll give you rest. That is an offer that he made that still stands. If you're weary, if you're carrying heavy burdens today, you could come to him and he would give you rest. Rest plus a rich and satisfying life. That's what he meant when he said, I'm the good shepherd. That's his offer. And I'm going to give you a moment to think about that. And if you would like to take him up on that offer right now, then I'm going to pray just a short prayer. And I'll invite you to pray it with me. You can pray it in your heart or pray it out loud at home. Doesn't matter. But if it expresses what's in your heart to take Jesus up on his offer, then why don't you do that? After I pray, a worship team will come up and we'll worship again for a bit. But if you pray this prayer, could I encourage you to do this? After you pray this prayer, could you go to the prayer link on our website and could you just let them know that you prayed this prayer? They would love to celebrate with you. They'd love to help you take the next step forward in your walk with Jesus. So if you're ready, let's just pray this little prayer and invite Jesus to give us rest and life to the full. Lord Jesus, thank you that you are the good shepherd. And so often I feel like someone that's harassed and helpless, and I have no one that looks after me and protects me and provides for me, and I just scramble from pillar to post, and I need help. Lord, I admit that I need help. I don't have life. I've been looking for life in all the wrong places, but I pray that you would give me the rich and satisfying life that you promised. And so today I just open my heart. I don't even hardly know what that means, but what I'm saying is, would you please come into my life and give me your life? I want to become your follower, and would you help me take the next steps? And we pray, Father, in Jesus' name, amen.